Cool, we are up and running. So this module, module 8, which was the one on conflict, and the one that's to come, which is all about behavioural change and goals, these three combined sort of represent how I tend to work with clients to help them cultivate and grow aspects of their healthy adult self. So if you like, the first sort of half of the program was all about navigating through self-doubt. And this part of the program is much more about how to build on those skills and those understandings and develop these really great resources of self-belief, self-worth, trust, and self-acceptance. So there are a number of tools in this module. I'm aware. And the first thing I just want to say is that there are no tools that are required, right? Like, you are the greatest tool. There's a ton of research that's been done over the last sort of 10 years around what makes good therapy. There's a bit of that going into coaching now. And the number one factor of whether a client achieves the outcomes that they wanted to achieve from a therapeutic relationship or anything in the talking realm, is the relationship that the client has with the practitioner. So I just want you to kind of hold that quite closely, right? That it's how you show up to the client, the relationship that you build with them, how you model showing them what a healthy self looks like, so that they can kind of integrate that into their way they speak to themselves. That's the thing that will make the difference. And I think that's something that can be really helpful, reassuring, hopefully, to hear as you're sort of, coaching tools for Africa, right? We're all surrounded by them. You could Google the pants off coaching tools and you'll find what you need. What I want you to always remember is that the greatest tool is you. So how you show up to your client, that's going to be the thing that makes the difference. And you may, if you've ever worked in a corporate environment, you may be familiar with something like a capability maturity model. Right? I used to be a management consultant, so I was very familiar with these things. And it basically says, in your industry, organization A, you're this mature, right? So in a kind of level one is, there are just a few heroes that are getting shit done and none of the kind of operating procedures are repeatable, right? A level five maturity is, everyone knows what's going on, their values are aligned with the organization and everything is repeatable, and basically anyone could get hit by a bus at lunchtime and the whole thing would keep on running, right? Because that's usually the goal. So capability maturity models, organizations pay a ton of money to have consultants come in and show them how to move up the ladder. And I share that because a researcher in the UK called David Clutterbuck, who has written many, many books about coaching and is sort of one of the kind of grandfathers of coaching in the UK, he developed a capability maturity model for coaching, which is a great kind of just a good litmus, where am I in all of this? And he suggests, and I'm not for a moment saying that this is true, but this is just something to bear in mind. He suggests that as we become more mature as practitioners, we are less likely to be focused on the tools, right? That actually we will move more into a kind of genuine, relationship with the client where there's no kind of performative coaching, let's do the tool now, right? It's much more of a kind of human to human connection. We're asking good questions, helping the client to reflect. So, all to say, when I was putting these tools together, I listened to a ton, because I've always recorded sessions for clients and let them have them as a sort of resource. So I had, literally hundreds of client sessions that I listened to figure out, what do I do when I'm helping a client do this thing? What are the questions I tend to ask? So all of the tools that you're seeing in particularly in this module, but right through the program, is very much that process of kind of listening to the calls and thinking, what questions do I ask? What does the research tell us about what works best? Because one of the things that I'm sure you're finding is we can't help our clients heal self-doubt with the same energy that created it, right? So it means that you can't resolve a crappy belief by buying into the belief itself, i.e. a client who has a perfectionist tendency can't then be supported to be a perfect client, right? We've got to do something different. So that means that for a lot of the coaching tools that are out there in the world, they're aimed at, you know, kind of removing the sense that a client actually has self-doubt, right? That they very much come from, this is what you need to do to shift a thing or change your belief, rather than paying attention to how the client's feeling, right? So a lot of that coaching that's out there is very much focused on the shifting the thinking of the client without really paying attention to where did that thinking come from. Yeah. So all to say, these tools are kind of cool to play with. I think that it's going to give you a sense of, you know, having a direction and focus for a session. And as you get more and more comfortable with this approach, what my hope is that, you know, you'll use the tools from time to time and your sessions will become more like conversations with your clients. Yeah. And the way I tend to use these tools now is I'll give them to clients as homework and say, go off and do it. Tell me what happened. And then our session becomes, what did you make of that? Where do we go with this? What's that all about for you? Yeah. So we're kind of entering their world and making sense of that with them. So to that end, what I wanted to do for this this session and next week as well is to really talk more about these approaches and kind of how you know where to go with the client, you know, with a client who presents with a specific issue, right? Well, what's the most effective intervention you can offer them? And sometimes that's going to be a tool and sometimes it won't be. It will be more like a conversation. So what we're going to talk about, we'll talk about the aims of this module, and we'll use a live example. So you'll be looking at your inner compass, and then next week we'll talk more about how this relates to your clients. And it will give us a chance to sort of demonstrate the approaches that I recommend you take, with some ideas for how you can take this off to practice spots and have a play. Yeah. So this is the compass. For those of you who are like, why are we talking about an inner compass, right? It's because the coaching framework, the model that I've developed, kind of resembles a compass. Yeah. So at the rose of the compass, if you like, is the healthy adult self, which has access to these four directions, the self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. And there are shadows to those resources, those healthy self-resources, protectors, the models of protection or the patterns of protection. So the idea is that we're helping our clients sort of stay here, sit in the seat of their own healthy self so that they can access these other resources. One thing to just note is that this sounds, most of us kind of go, self-trust, yeah, I kind of know what that is, right? And again, it's the idea of the thing versus having the client feel embodied in the thing, right? That's what we're talking about over this module. Is that that's what we want to provide them with, is a way to not just understand what self-trust, for example, means or is, but how does it feel inside of them? How do they know that they are trusting themselves more? And how do we support them as coaches to get there, to feel that? Yeah. So, the compass. Here's some principles to start with. We as self-belief coaches believe unconditionally in the client's healthy self, right? It's like to me, I've not yet met a client who does not have a healthy self. So we believe unconditionally in the healthy self, and therefore in the client's ability and capacity to cultivate self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. Yeah. That's a great place to start from, because then we're looking for it. Then we're like, oh, where is your healthy self in all of this? The client, of course, may not see these qualities in themselves. They may not, they may think, oh, I don't trust myself at all. I don't really believe in myself at all. I'm here because of that, right? So the one thing that to kind of really sit with is, what if it doesn't matter how well developed these qualities are, right, in the client? And, you know, one of the things I was talking about with this morning's class is a lot of marketing. I'm just going to stop that share, but a lot of marketing around coaching is like, are you 110% ready to do the work? You know, are you, you know, it puts conditions on the client. You know, we come to every session, do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. If we accept that you can't heal self-doubt with the same energy that created it, that same energy is what we've used in marketing our coaching practices to, you know, attract clients, right? So for me, it was like a total kind of head mashup of, oh, none of that's going to work. And in fact, you know, I have often found that clients are never ready. Nobody wants to look at their self-doubt, right? So for me, it had to be where I had to learn how to tell a different story to reach clients, right? And, you know, if you're at all familiar with the way I tend to talk to muggle clients, it's very much like, it's a bit shit, isn't it? It's okay. It makes sense. And you'll be all right. And I'm here for that, right? There's nothing, you don't need to be any different to do this. So it's just something to bear in mind, right? Like, the way that we actually attract our clients is a meta belief system often of the way that we coach. And if our clients feel like, I'm going to need to be a different person in order to coach with you, it will feel confusing for them. It'll be like, oh, I'm not sure that vibe is me. Whereas if you're like, dude, there's nothing you need to do or say that's different. But if you feel like, I really want to look at my self-doubt and I don't even really feel that ready for that, I'm your coach. It's that kind of approach that I think really makes a difference for our clients. Yeah. A key, I'll just come back to these slides. A key sort of approach that I think has really helped me is to stay with, like, what are we trying to do here? Like, when it comes to actually sitting in that healthy adult self, what's the outcome for the clients? We want them to feel reassured, right? Reassured that their experience is both, you know, universal and deeply personal, right? It's never created in a vacuum. There's always a bloody good reason why self-doubt's here. So we can reassure them that they're not crazy or cursed, right? Secondly, to help them reflect and make sense of their experiences, right? To help them understand that, well, this makes sense to you as a coach. How can they see that it makes sense? And thirdly, to feel resourced, right? So to lean into their healthy self to take the next step, which might not be action, right? But the next step, where are they going with what they want in their lives? How can they take the next step? So these are the aims of this, of developing this inner compass and helping bring it to life. And when it comes to the healthy self, we know that this is starting to feel more present for the client, or more embodied for the client, when they believe they are creative and resourced, right? When they have access to these aspects of themselves. They can kind of name it. Oh, this is my self-belief. This is my self-trust. And our job in this is to show clients how to access these parts, how to recognize that they are part of them, and to see, importantly, that they're always in choice. So this means that whenever, you know, they're doing something in their lives, taking the next step, they can see that they have a choice, right? So, oh, I'm about to post something that's a little bit controversial on Instagram, and I can anticipate that, oh, that might cause some judgment. I've got some sensitivity to judgment. So how am I going to prepare for that and take care of myself, even if that judgment shows up? That's a very different approach to, I'm going to wing it and hope nobody judges me, or I'm going to hate on the person who's judging me because it's all about them, right? There's a lot of that kind of sentiment out there in the world, you know, that somehow other people are responsible for not ever activating us or even triggering us, that other people are responsible for that. We actually want our clients to feel like, well, it doesn't really matter what anyone else is doing or what is going on in the world. I've got me. I can come back to me and I can take care of me. Yeah. We don't have those kind of expectations of the world. That feels, I think, way healthier, right? No matter what happens, I've got my own back. It's okay for people to judge me. It's okay for me to fail. It's okay for me to be disappointed. When our clients get to that place and they're willing to take those risks, then you can see that their healthy self is expanding. And this is really key, right? Is how do we know that we are having a success with our clients? How do we know that our clients are moving towards that healthier self-concept? They are aware of their survival strategies, right? Or their protective beliefs and behaviors. They kind of have a sense of, oh, here I am blaming on everybody else or distracting myself endlessly so I don't have to do the thing that feels awkward. You'll know that they're expanding because they have a sense that their perceived psychological risks are something that they can work with. They can positively impact them, even when they've got real sensitivity, right? It's okay if someone judges me, I'll probably be okay. Yeah. What happens over time is when a client is in that zone of experimenting and trying things out and seeing what happens and being willing to risk what has previously felt like they had to hold themselves back, over time, what happens is the healthy adult self replaces the protector as that automatic response. Yeah. Over time, what you're starting to listen to is the healthy self, not the protector. The protector has less to do. It's like, oh, there's a grown-up in the room suddenly. I'm going to let them sort this out. Yeah. All starting to make sense? Yeah, hopefully. Cool. So what we're going to do today is just talk a bit about expanding your own personal compass, you know, the accessing these resources. So I wanted us to get some raw material to start with, just to play with. And I'm just going to give you a couple of writing prompts just to get something on paper. And the idea is what we'll do is we'll go through the compass and look at where your challenge or issue or dilemma that you're sitting with right now fits, right? And then we can look at, so when a client presents with this kind of thing, where do we go? How do we start? How might we bring these tools in to support them? Yeah. So if you could all just spend a few minutes, I want you to write down just a current challenge, issue, dilemma that you have in your world right now. Could be in your coaching practice, it could be to do with a client, could be just in your life generally. Don't limit yourself. Write down a couple if you want to and then just choose one. And just name it for yourself so you kind of know what it is. And the next prompt is, I wish I was able to. So what do you wish you were able to do? What is it about this challenge that's holding you back? So you've got your current challenge and then what you wish you were able to do. And then what's the reason that this is a challenge? Just write some ideas for you, for yourself. All right, so why is this a challenge for you right now in your life? So expanding on the reason. So why is this hard for you? Right? What is the reason that this is a challenge? Does that make sense, Scott? Cool. And then the last prompt is, when I think about this challenge, my protector believes what? So just to recap those questions, those reflection questions, naming the challenge that you have, what you wish you were able to do instead or differently, the reason that this is a challenge, like why is this hard for you, and then what your protector believes about this challenge. Everyone got something? Yeah? Okay, so don't panic on getting that like perfectly, because we can talk as we go. But what we're going to do is look at how you'd know where to start to coach a client, on that kind of thing, on that challenge, right? So I want to go through. This thing is giving me the jips. Let me move the box. Here we go. Okay, sorry. So this is the coaching framework. So what we're going to do is go through these different compass points, just so you've got a kind of reference, right, for where we go and why we might start at a certain place. Yeah. So we start with the sovereign. And I just want to say, like, I've given these compass points archetypal names. That's because I'm quite fascinated and trained in depth psychology, which is where archetypal kind of thinking comes from. If you don't like that, or it doesn't fit with your clients, or you want to change that to something, then go ahead, right? Like, don't feel bound by any of this stuff. If you just want to call it self-belief, that is absolutely sweet, yeah? So for me, though, the archetype kind of takes it a little deeper and richer, right? Because that self-belief for me is very much sovereign energy, and sovereignty is, you know, I'm okay in my world, right? I take care of my world. So the way I like to think of self-belief, and all of the compass points have a kind of elemental aspect to them, which I think is helpful to remember them. Self-belief is fire, right? It's the fire in your belly. So it's associated with your vision for your life and your values, right? So this could be your vision for your work or your family life, your relationship with your body. I mean, it's anything, right? Your creativity, anything at all. What's the vision you have for your life? And what are the values that get expressed through that vision, right? Because it's no accident that we are excited and have fire in our belly about specific things, right? It's no accident. So what is it about your values that are getting expressed through that specific vision? So it's about leadership, right? Leadership of yourself in your life and different areas of your life. And it's also about encouraging yourself to reach the goals that help you to lead, to express your vision, live in alignment with your values. One of the things I'll offer is I can't even tell you how many people I've worked with who have never taken a moment to consider, what do I want from my life? Right? Like, and I think because we live in, you know, on Planet Coach, and we kind of do this stuff for a living, it's a bit shocking to me still, right? But there are most humans don't do that. They just don't. They kind of get on, they follow a script, right? We go through that kind of, you know, forming self-concept where, well, this is just what people like me do. So it can be hugely exciting and sometimes confronting for clients when you can say, well, you know, what do you want from your life? It can be really kind of challenging, particularly when you've got people who are, or clients who are, questioning the vision and whether they've kind of, you know, like I did and maybe some of you did, sort of built it, climbed a ladder, but you find it's attached to the wrong building, right? So then you're like, shit, I've got to go all the way back down and then put it somewhere else. And that can be quite, you know, confronting and scary, right, to think about making changes midlife. And yet so many of us, you know, have this incredible courage to do that. So all to say, I think sometimes we take for granted these things that we know are amazing. Like when you're living in alignment with your values, everything feels so great, right? But for clients who are like, I don't even have a vision for my life and I don't really know what my values are, this can be incredibly helpful. But also it may be a little scary, right? Because it may be the first time. Yeah. Yeah, Scott.
Hi, Sass.
Hi.
Yeah, just if you could clarify for me, if possible, please, just to make sure I'm on the right road here. Something that came up for me, I found it hard to name it, but what really was going on through my mind was that I feel I placate people, I people please, and I'd written things down like I'm not likable, I don't fit in, I'm not part of the tribe. Unless I kind of like try and suck up to people for them to like me, do things which I feel uncomfortable in doing at times, but I feel as if I'm being false as well. So yep. I didn't know what to name that, but it was something which kind of really resonated with me and made me feel as if, well, this is something that I feel strongly about, because I know I do it, and I was doing it the weekend a lot. And I feel as if I lose my authenticity, and there's a fear that if I am not doing this, then I just might not be part of the group, if that makes sense. So I was just wondering if that was something which would work in this environment, what we're talking about now.
So it absolutely does. What I want you to do, Scott, is hold on to this, because it's a beautiful example. And if it's okay with you, I'll probably come back to you and say, let's look at this as an example. What I want you to do is just notice, as we go around the compass, where does my dilemma fit? Right? What are the aspects of my dilemma that are connected to this part of the compass? Right?
Can I just say something to you as well?
Yep.
I've got to leave at 6 o'clock, right? And what's just happened, it's like happened in a nanosecond. I felt really afraid of saying that to you in case you judge me.
Yeah, of course you would, because bloody that's hell. The belief you're coming bloody from, hell. Right? Yeah. What I'm hoping, Scott, is that you're starting to see that there isn't anything you could say where I would judge you. Because I want your healthy adult self to be in charge here.
Okay, yeah.
So you're free to ask your questions and bring your stuff, and I think it's incredibly courageous to do so. And if we've got time, I'd love to come back to you. If you do have to go, that's okay. But if we've got time, we can come back and chat about this. Okay. Yeah,
no worries at all.
If we don't, I'd highly recommend coming to the study group on Thursday. And
cool.
Tell Scott to sort it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there Thursday, yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. Brilliant. So folks, just notice if you're when you think about your dilemma, is it connected to your fire in your belly? Is it connected to these things, your vision and your values, your leadership, your encouragement to reach your goals? Just notice, I think my dilemma belongs in this part of the compass. It's this bit that needs to help it. Yeah. And we'll keep going, and then we'll come back and look at some examples. So the next compass point is to the east, and it's the lover. And this is about self-acceptance. Right? So for me, this is associated with the element of water, because it's about being in the flow of life. So it's the things like our needs, our opinions, our preferences. You know, you're never in, even if you're in a river, you're never in the river in the same place twice. Our needs, our opinions, our preferences, they're continuously evolving depending on the context. Yeah. It's associated with our emotions, very transitory. Emotions last moments. Sometimes we make really big decisions based on how we are feeling in the moment. Yeah. And it's about belonging to yourself. Right, so all of the different parts of you, the judgy, petty parts of you, and your past self, and the frightened parts, and the parts that are incredibly generous and brave, everything. Right, I have this exercise that I call the love bus, and it's basically like, can you bring all your parts on the bus? Notice the parts that you want to abandon by the side of the road. Right, so that, using that visual metaphor, can you allow all of the parts of you to belong to you? Because, and Scott, you may relate to this, when you belong to yourself, it means that you're connecting with others, with the world, with nature, with spirit, if that's important to you, you're connecting from a more authentic place, because you know you and you belong to you. You know your needs and your emotions. You know, all your parts. And so when you're connecting to others, you're doing that from a place that feels like, yeah, this is me. Can I share me with you? Yeah. So notice that the shadow of self-acceptance is the martyr, right? I'm going to be whoever you need me to be, and I'll abandon all my parts by the side of the road. Yeah. So just notice, does your dilemma fit here? Are these the things that you need more of? The next one is the warrior. Warrior is about self-worth. For me, this is very, very earthy, right? So I always think about, you know, standing in the ground and drawing a line in the sand. That's how I see self-worth, right? So it's about advocating for yourself. It's about boundaries. The things you do to take care of yourself when you recognize something is not okay. Right? The way I teach boundaries, they're not ultimatums. And it's not trying to boil the ocean and control what everybody else is doing or thinking or saying. Right? It's very much about what do you do to take care of you, and then everyone else is free to be them. Yeah. It's self-worth is also for me about territory. So it's the space we allow ourselves to take up, right? In our lives, in our online lives, in our businesses, in our families, in our relationships, in our own lives, in relationships with ourselves. But what space do you allow yourself to take up? It's also about action, right? So there's nothing really theoretical about that warrior energy. It's like you're in it because you're doing something to take care of you. Yeah. And, you know, one of the aspects of self-worth that I think is really helpful to think about when I talk about advocacy, it's really tangible stuff, like the very finite resources that you have available to you, money, time, energy. Right, you're advocating for those things and what you can spend them on, basically, what you choose to spend them on. So does your dilemma need more of this to solve it? Is this where you need to go? And then our final compass point is the sage energy. So that is not the herb, right? Not the herb, it's about wisdom. Right, self-trust, and it's associated with air because, you know, it's all the stuff that's kind of intangible. So it's about wisdom, your intellect and your intuition, right? When you trust yourself to kind of know, even if you don't have a clear answer, or one that makes logic sense, that you kind of know what you need to do. It's about discernment, right? Being able to recognize, is this a place I want to be? Is this right for me? What's going on here? Like trusting yourself to be able to discern the reasons why you may want to make different choices. And it's about decision making. Now, being able to say, okay, this is what I'm doing. So notice that sage, the shadow of sage is the bystander, right? I don't know enough to make a decision. I don't know enough to take action. I'm just going to sit here and kind of wait until I know enough, or I, you know, have enough information, or I have a sign. Whereas when you're in that really healthy sage energy, it's like, okay, I can make a decision based on imperfect information, right? I can trust myself to have an answer here that's going to help me move forward. And it's about taking perspectives. And sometimes that's about holding a lot of complexity, right? Because often we'll take the perspective of someone else who may be impacted by our decisions. Sometimes we get a bit caught up in that, and it's like we're then making a decision based on someone else's perspective rather than our own. So it's just about, you know, seeing where do I need to be more in balance here? How can I take whatever perspective feels good to me? And sometimes we're going to make decisions that aren't in our best interest, but that feel like they align more with our greater values, right? There's no kind of rule here. It's much more about, you know, just trusting yourself to make the decision that leaves you feeling the most kind of satisfied, the most okay. Yeah. So notice your dilemma. Do you need more sage energy? Do you need more of that self-trust to kind of bring it to a resolution of some sort? Yeah. So I just want to go back to, this changes quickly. Just go back to here. So just notice that as we are looking at these compass points, we're looking at what is it that the client is bringing in, or in this case, you're bringing in a dilemma, an issue, a challenge, and we're looking at where do we start? What's the best way to intervene here? What's the most help we can offer? Yeah. And we've got lots of choices. So to bring this to life, I'd love to have a couple of people volunteer their dilemma, their challenge. And maybe, Scott, we could start with you, if that's okay. We've got 15 minutes.
Yes, cool.
Example. And what we'll do is I'll just kind of share, you know, how I would go in and sort of look at this. And then we can chat about it and play and ask questions and all that jazz. Okay. So, Scott, you mentioned earlier that you have this sense that, and I'm just going to paraphrase what I heard you say, that you find yourself people pleasing and wanting to make sure everyone else is okay, but it's often at your expense.
Yeah.
And I'm just interested to know a bit more about what your protector says about this.
excuse me. Again, it's the need to wanting to fit in. The wanting to be liked. And I guess what's coming to mind to me is when I was younger, there was probably certain things I wanted to do with my life, what I wanted to be, but I didn't think they would ring true with the stronger characters in my family. So even as a youngster, when I, for example, when I first left school and I flitted between jobs for a period of time, in family get-togethers, I would find myself being so nice, so wanting to please in one way or another. So, for example, my grandfather or my nan or my dad or someone, and didn't mention that I was out of work or that I wanted a career in music because it wasn't the thing to do.
Yeah.
So, and I think I'd fly under the radar as well.
Yeah.
But I also think those are traits, behavioural traits, which I carry with me today. You know, I was out on a 50th birthday party last Saturday just gone, bumping into people I hadn't seen for a long time. And I felt that, you know, if someone said white was black, I'd agree. Or, you know, two and two made five. Just to try and be on the same page, if this makes any sense at all.
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah. I imagine everyone's going, yeah, that makes total sense. And to be honest, Scott, you know, I think sometimes this is a healthy response, right? We accommodate others and we want to connect and fit in.
Yeah, get that.
What I notice, though, is it sounds to me like, just even in the way you're describing this, that you're a bit fed up of it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And just notice here that this is a long-standing pattern, right? Mm. This is something you've done since, you know, you left school. So it's, you know, a few decades that you've been engaging in this pattern. So I just want to offer you, you know, don't be in a screaming rush to kind of change it here, right? There's no rush. But what I want just invite you to think about is, you know, of these kind of four healthy self resources, which is the one that you sense you need more of?
Arguably the lover.
Right. Yeah. I can totally see that. So if you had more of that loving energy towards yourself, what difference would that make for you?
I'd feel as if I'd kind of taken the shackles off.
Right.
Yeah, a sense of freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would empower me to be out probably from a position of more authenticity. Yeah, and that, you know, that's what, you know, kind of comes to mind at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely bang on, right? Like, to just go in there and go, okay, well, who am I in all of this, right? Who am I? Who is Scott in all of this? Because one thing I know about that kind of tendency to want to please others is that we'll often abandon ourselves.
Makes sense.
Right? In the hope that if I just be who this person wants me to be or who I think they want me to be, right, that somehow we'll be safe. So we sort of abandon ourselves and go over to their corner and go, okay, who do you need me to be? I can do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that kind of resonate with, you know, if you just even think back to what you were doing on at the weekend?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If I say the right things, but if I say what I think people want to hear, then, you know, they're going to like me. I might be invited to go to the next party or go out with the guys for another drink or those kind of things, really.
Yeah.
And I think there was a time in my life when I was like that. And it kind of like was a time when I felt as if I'd hit kind of like rock bottom in my life when I was in my early 20s. And I kind of like galvanized a lot of strength. And I felt that, I even think about it now, there was a time in my life when I felt free and I felt as if I wasn't really trying to placate people. This is why I hadn't got a care in the world, because I'd gone through what I perceived to be quite a bit of a bit of emotional turmoil, and I'd come out the other side, and I wasn't trying to be liked, but found myself popular.
Nice. Why do you think that is?
Because I just think I came from a position of authenticity, as if like I didn't really give a toss. And I felt that my sense of humour was allowed to manifest. I felt that, you know, people liked me for who I was, not for someone I was trying to be. I hadn't got pot to piss in many ways. So it was kind of like, who cares?
I just love that you're like remembering that time in your life where you were living from your authentic self. And it sounds like that was really fun.
Oh, it was, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I'd really encourage you to do, Scott. There's an exercise that I just mentioned earlier. There's an exercise in this module called the Love Bus.
Yeah.
Forgive the cheesy metaphors. I'm all about that. But what that exercise is all about is just naming for yourself all of the different aspects that make up you right now in your life, right? All your parts. And it can bring up all kinds of things, memories, experiences that you've had, relationships that you've had in the past. The idea is that you're starting to build a picture of who you are right now, right? What your authentic self actually is, and the parts of you that you might try to abandon when you're doing that thing of pleasing other people.
Okay.
Because one of the things that you said, which I thought was really telling, was you were really popular because you were coming from that authentic place.
Yeah.
People who know themselves and like themselves are really easy to like. Like,
yeah.
what if the paradox here is that this idea that if I become who other people need me to be, that will get me liked. What if that is absolutely wrong and the opposite is true? If I like me, then the people who connect to me will be liking a genuine version of me. So we'll both like me.
Mm. It's weird in a way because I've actually longed at times to be like that person again. And
Well,
I
he's
actually
right
think,
there.
I get that.
Yeah.
And I actually think that is the person who my wife knows.
Nice. Yeah.
You
So
know, when I feel,
you may
sorry.
actually, if you feel comfortable, you may even want to talk to your wife and say, "Who do you remember when we met? Who was I? Like, tell me more about that guy. I want to get to know him a bit more." I'm sure she would, from what you're describing, I'm sure she has lots of fun memories to share.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. No, thanks for that.
So great example, Scott. And what just thank you for sharing that. And a great example for the group, just to see, when you're working with a client who kind of knows this model, you can say, "What do you think you need more of?" Right? And Scott's like, "I think I need some more lover." Right? I need that energy in my heart here. The truth of the matter is, you could have picked anything and it would have been fine. I was thinking, maybe it's about self-belief. Maybe you need more sovereignty, right? Like to kind of stand in who you are. Maybe it would be great to sort of figure out what are your values right now? What's the vision you have for who you want to become? And that could have worked, right? Any of it could have worked. But the idea that you knew this is what I want, I'm like 100% going to be behind that all the way, because that's your healthy self offering you something in all of this.
Yeah, when you read that out, that kind of resonated me with me. It all sort of resonated with me, but that stood out.
And there are lots of overlaps, right? So you don't have to worry about being perfect with this stuff. But yeah. So that would be my homework invitation for you, Scott, is to find out who's on your love bus. Chat to your wife about what she remembers. So, see if you can access that part of you. He's still there. He's still with you. He's just a little bit like hiding in the corner going, "Is it safe to come out?"
Oh, do you know what? When there's times when I'm kind of like on my own, or for example, just with my wife or whatever, and I feel so comfortable because I am being me. And I think you might ask the question, well, what happened for you not to be you when you felt that way? And I think responsibility and expectation came back into my life. And as soon as expectation came back into my life, it started to play on my mind of how, oh, I'm kind of like, I'm running in these circles now. And all of a sudden, well, what person do I need to be to fit in? And slowly but surely, kind of like, it's as if like that neural pathway had been found again.
And I would offer, Scott, I think this happens to a lot of men when you start getting married and having babies and extra responsibilities, and then you need to earn more money, and so you take on more responsibility. Like, I think that is a really shared experience for a lot of men, and partly that's because our story of what being a man is in our culture needs work, right? So my sense is that if you start with, who are you now? Look at all those parts of you. So you get a bit of a sense of what are the things you want more of, right? And then you can start to see, how do I bring aspects of that part of me into other contexts, right? How do I bring that part of me into work, for example? I'm going to let you go because you need to be gone by 6, so that's totally fine.
Yeah, just had a knock on the door. Look, thanks for today. It's really helped. Thank you.
Yeah, you're so
Cheers.
welcome, Scott. All
Okay.
right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Cool. So see what we did. All we're doing is going, okay, so where does this dilemma sit, and this issue that a client's brought to us, where does it sit and where do we go? Would someone else like to volunteer just to have a little look at this? It'd be great to just get a couple of examples. Yeah, Jane, thanks.
My challenge was that I'm not sharing about my coaching regularly. I'll just skip right to the protective belief that's that I'm not making sense or I'm doing it wrong.
What do you think you need more of?
I think it's somewhere between the sage self-trust or the warrior, the self-worth.
Yeah, I can see that totally. And just notice, right, like these two are the kind of under-functioning protectors, right? So the shadows of the sage and the warrior, the scapegoat and the bystander, they're the under-functioners. They're like, just sit back, don't do anything. That's where safety lies, right? So that's a great thing to kind of recognize. It sounds like it describes your experience right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a bit more sage, a bit more kind of, okay, well, I'm just going to take, I'm going to trust myself to know what to say, and then worry, I'm going to take some action. Like, what would that give you?
I guess just a little more energy to actually like do it, to do the thing.
Mm-hmm. Is that why it feels hard? Like there's just no energy?
Yeah, because it feels like I have to like conjure up this perfect thing to say, or this perfect thing that's going to attract people or get them to actually want to dive into coaching. And it feels like I have to like muster up this perfect thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm hearing there's a bit of critic in there as well, right? You've got a real sophisticated protector going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I'm curious to know, like, why do you want people to work with you? Like, what's this all about? What's the aim here? What is the vision for your coaching practice?
I mean, I want to see more creatives putting their visions out into the world and like believing in it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. There's a post.
Yeah.
Why does that matter? Why do we need more creatives putting their work in the world, believing in themselves?
Just more unique ideas, more possibility.
Why does that matter?
I guess ultimately because I've met so many creatives that just are walking around feeling lost and low and defeated.
What's that like for you watching them?
I mean, it feels like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have, I guess, more empathy, more enthusiasm for other people and wanting to like bolster them and their ideas.
So I just noticed like there's a sort of shift in your energy as you're talking about other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even saying, you know, that you have a bit more, you have empathy and you want to see people share their ideas, like not hold themselves back.
Mm-hmm.
So just notice that, right? Like if we go into sovereignty, into self-belief, like the mission you have for your business is, or for your coaching work, excuse me, is to you know, intervene between the client who the creative person who is holding themselves back and their ideas being in the world. Like you're acting as a kind of bridge to support them to be able to do that. And my sense is that it might be that critic who wants it to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
who's kind of getting in the way of these things.
Mm.
So all to say, like, I'm hearing that kind of scapegoat and I'm hearing the bystander, but it sounds like the critic's like, well, you can't take action until you've got it right, got it perfect. It's got to, the messages have got to, they've got a lot riding on them. This has got to bring in more clients, right? So one of the things to just notice, right, is that, and I think I shared this when we were talking about the different protective patterns. The reason I'm suggesting this, so we go one further spot round the compass to kind of support a protector. So because I'm hearing a lot of critic, right, my sense is that the kind of way forward through this is for you to embody the lover and connect to your clients.
Mm.
Connect to your clients in that way that is very compassionate and imperfect, right? Embracing compassion and imperfection and just talking to your clients. Right? So now you could start anywhere, but I'm just suggesting it feels to me like it's the critic that's actually the protector at play here. And I think even when you said what your protector's views were, there was something about it's not good enough or it won't attract clients in.
Mm-hmm.
So moving into that self-acceptance state of lover energy, right? How can I connect with my clients and let them know that I can help? And here's how I know where they're at. The thing about doing that is it sort of releases you from this need for every post to result in a client, right? Because there's a shit ton of pressure to put on yourself and your clients, right? But in the space of a few minutes, I've heard you say three or four things that would make amazing messages. So maybe that could be a little practice for you. You know, maybe whenever you're feeling like, oh, I want to conjure up some of that creative energy to talk to my clients. You know, writing love notes to your clients. What do I wish you knew? What do I want you to know about your future? What do I see for you? This is what it's like for me watching you hold yourself back. My God, it's heartbreaking. I need your creative ideas in the world. We all do. We can't have the same ones because that's got us to here. And if we're going where we want to go, we need so many more ideas, and they've got to be original and diverse and interesting and new. And the only way we're going to get there is if you are brave enough, dear creative, to put your stuff in the world. Right? It's like when you get into that kind of energy of how do I let you know how much I need you to be in the world? You know, I think about this a lot with the clients I work with is, you know, the amount of, and I work 90% with women, the amount of women that hold themselves back because they don't think they're good enough. They're taking care of everybody else except themselves. They think it's too hard and they can't handle it, but they're just waiting to know more. Like all those protective patterns, it drives me nuts. I just think, what a freaking waste of potential. So I'm going to find any way I can to get that message to them. And I'm going to say it 1,000 different ways every day until I die, because that's how, selfishly, that's how I get to kind of, you know, live in alignment with my values, with what matters to me. Okay? So this is the thing to recognize. When you are in that serving place, when you are writing to your clients, sharing messages that you think would help them, it kind of gets you out of that place of this has got to be right, because your protector has got less to do. You're in a different spot, right? You're accessing a different part of your brain. The protector's all about, you know, safety and being very conservative. Self-acceptance, that love part, that's in the part of your brain that's about empathy and connection and creativity. So you're actually, you know, operating from a whole different neurobiology. I don't know how that lands for you, Jane. I'm doing a lot of talking.
No, it landed at what I had two parts of my brain going, yeah. Like receiving the coaching and also like learning the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it interesting how you took me basically all the way around the compass.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, the where we landed with that idea of like writing the clients basically love messages.
Yeah.
How that really like that felt more energizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just seeing how you kind of like guided me around by following like the energy of what I was saying.
Yeah. Totally. Client always knows. Client always knows. And I think this is the thing, right? That's why the sort of first principle is always client has a healthy adult self. That's what's brought them into the session. They know. They will, you know, we're just going to listen out for it. And the protector is going to be noisy and want to give you some reasons and all of that. And that's what the protector's there to do. That's all good. But it's like, oh, okay, so if I know that that is what the protector is going to tell me, how do I then go, oh, okay, cool. So we've got a critic that's going, it's not good enough, it's not right, you won't say the right thing, and therefore, you know, you won't get clients. So we move around. We get out of that energy because we can't solve self-doubt with the same energy that created it. So this is a great example, Jane, and I'm super glad we got a bit of a personal one from Scott, and now we've got more of a coachy one from you. What I'm hoping, folks, is that you're starting to see, oh, okay, so that's the way in, right? That's the way in. Usually by the time you're getting to this place with clients, you've probably done some work on their self-doubt. You may not. I mean, I've sort of organized the program so that it follows the typical trajectory of coaching. Usually we need to do a little bit of work on why are you even having the self-doubt in the first place to get here. But equally, you know, if it was Jane and Mai's first ever session and she said, look, this is what's going on, then we could talk a bit more about, well, why does that feel hard and what is that related to for you? We could look at that if that felt, you know, intuitively more productive. Right. So sometimes, you know, I think the things to really pay attention to are the energy of the client and the resistance. Right. If you're getting a lot of resistance, then it's like, okay, we just need to do some work to help the protector feel safe. Right. To understand a bit more about where is that coming from? How does that make sense? And then it will probably be a bit easier to go into, okay, so, you know, what do we do differently? What could we try here? What's a good thing to experiment with? And the thing is, like if Jane, for example, takes this and runs with it and maybe starts, you know, a few mornings a week, it's like, okay, this is my time to think about my clients. I'm going to do it and set it up so it's beautiful and there's a candle and all sorts of shit. Then it's like that then becomes the way you plan out your posts. It's actually away from social media. It's probably in your garden and you've got a notebook and it feels much more intimate and personal. The energy that you create and then becomes the energy that gets transmitted. Right? But that intimacy, that sense of, I really bloody care about you, dear client, even though I don't even know who you are, I really care about, and I care because this is my work in the world and how cool is it that I get to help you do yours? Like, that energy is palpable. And so when you then send it out into the world, it wouldn't surprise me if that results in more clients, somewhat ironically, right? But it's not because you're doing anything differently. It's because of the energy you're creating it with. When you're creating social media posts from the energy of, shit, this better result in a client, that's palpable too. I think our clients can smell it. They're a bit like, whoa, what's going on there? Don't know. Vibes are off. Yeah. So then it becomes, this is the way that I write for my potential clients. And it means that when you're creating content in the future, Jane, you do that thing where you go, oh no, that was the old way, the kind of clenched fist, shit, I hope this works way. That's me in the self-doubt loop. But when I can get out of that and go, oh, okay, now I found this better way that just feels more energizing. It feels more intimate. It feels like I'm actually connecting to my clients. I'm right in my love energy when I'm doing this. It feels great to me. Then that's a way of supporting you to get zip out of that loop straight away. And you create completely different outcomes for yourself because of what you're doing differently.
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So that all makes 100% sense. And I can see myself doing that. With where I started, the sage and the warrior. So like one of my things I know is like trusting that what I say, like without backing down if people disagree. So if you had kind of kept me in the warrior or the sage, yeah, what kind of exercises or like how would that have looked as far as guidance?
Yeah, so if we, and this is one thing to just offer as well, is I kind of led you down that path a little bit, totally. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of got you to talk about your protector, and then I just kept asking more questions about it. So all to say, keep asking your clients questions and just sort of trust the energy. Where did they end up? Because sometimes we're like, I am a people pleaser and therefore it's always this, right? And sometimes that may not be true for specific things. It may be actually there's something else going on, right? So sometimes our clients can have a self-concept that kind of locks them into, you know, this must be the reason, right? So all to say, keep asking questions and trust your energy. And if we'd stayed with the sage, I'm just going to share my screen so you can see this. If we'd stayed with the sage and it's like, oh, you know, I don't know if I know enough or if I haven't got enough, you know, that bystander protector, I've got to wait until I know more, or I have the magic, you know, the blessed thing happens and all the content falls into my brain and I'm inspired and it all goes there. What I would have done is said, okay, well, let's go back to self-belief. What's the mission here? Why are we doing all of it? Why are we putting ourselves through this?
Mm.
And if we'd stayed in that scapegoaty place of it's just so hard and I don't know what I'm doing, it's like, okay, well, how can you trust yourself? What are the things you do know? You know, you'd know you want to see your clients get their stuff in the world, you know. So all to say, wherever we start, we're going to get somewhere. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I was quite excited to sort of play with this. And I remember showing this to my supervisor for the first time, very tentatively. And she was like, the genius of this is it's so forgiving. It doesn't matter. Because we all need all of these things. And it doesn't really matter where you start. Yeah. And what I found is doing a little bit of that work at the start, just to kind of get a sense of what's actually present for the client here, can help you to get to a place where A, there's no resistance, B, there's higher energy, and C, the client's like, can't wait to get off the call and get cracking. You know, that's a great sort of sign that we've got somewhere that the healthy self is feeling that energy. Does that help you, Jane? Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, and it makes sense that you kind of kept going because the energy, like I noticed the questions and how they connected, but that energy really, I felt the shift once we talked about like the empathy and the love for others.
Yeah, and notice I was just like, why does this matter? Why does this matter? It's quite an annoying question. But when a client can sit with it and go, well, this is why, it's like we're tapping into, you know, a aspect of that healthy self that knows the answer. You know?
Yeah. And so if I had stayed in like the, it matters because like my thoughts matter or what I have to say, like that would have been a different place to land and work in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And possibly would have indicated maybe a different value. Right? Like, oh, I want to get my stuff in the world. Like it's about your stuff getting in the world. But what I was hearing was a real deep value of empathy. Like I want other people's stuff to get in the world. And I think that's the paradox, right? Is that it's like kind of, it feels like it's us, but it's not.
I do feel like it's both, because it's like I want my stuff to be in the world because I think it will help others, and it's that empathy. Yeah. So it's all it like it's both, but yeah, you took me deeper.
Yeah, cool. I'm so glad that helped. Anyone else have questions about this generally, where you're at? Tina.
Well, I'm very nervous right now because of two things I have after this call, but we probably don't have any time to talk about it. But I'm just, now that it's top of mind and I'm looking at the time and I'm like, oh no, it's coming up. So I don't know if you have any time to add on.
We've got 12 whole minutes.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I have two kind of like pick me situations in a row. The first one is a new client. And she wrote on, and it's right after this, on her intake form, like, I just want to determine if you're the right person to fit the job, which is true and accurate, but I think I was a little sensitive because the next one is I was contacted for an interview for resume writing a bit out of my scope because it's writing for these biotech medical engineers at this high level, which I don't typically do, but they really want to move forward with the resume. So self-doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think
tell me what's at the crux of both of these things.
I know, I'm so nervous. Well, I think especially for the resume, the biotech, you know, CEO, you know, I'm from education, so a lot of times the corporate world is very intimidating. So there's that, and there's also I think the whole question of am I good enough at what I do, right? You know, because I'm just learning anytime. I always did the same thing and now I'm learning new things. And so then that's the big question.
I think you're bang on, Tina. That's what I'm hearing. Like, am I good enough to be chosen?
Yeah, pick me.
Will they? Yeah. Even phrasing this as I've got two pick me situations.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, oh man. Yeah. So yeah. So there is that critic that's like, maybe you're not good enough. Maybe they won't pick you. Right.
Right.
So in that context, we go, much like Jane, we go straight to that lover energy, to compassion for yourself, for the part of you that's a bit nervous, the part of you that's excited, right? The part of you that really wants to help the client, that would love to get paid from a biotech resume writing company, right? Right? And so all those parts are there, yeah? And, you know, I just wonder, like, and you may want to close your eyes for this if that helps you, because I can feel that kind of nervous energy is
horrible. Sorry if I'm getting you guys upset.
No, it's all good. I can feel it. I can feel it. So feel free to close your eyes if that helps you. But I just really invite you to kind of go inside and just like scan your body. Notice that there are nervousness there. Might be little flutterings and just invite your body to soften. Just breathe. Just know that you're going to show up to these calls and you've got you. And you've got so much to share. And if they're lucky enough to choose you, they get to share in that too. Just notice that there are parts of you that are excited. Parts of you that feel a bit nervous. Just invite them in. Just notice if there's anything you need to hear from yourself. And just hear that message. Just know that you just have to show up as you. Deep breath. Just let your belly soften. You know everything you need to know for these interviews. You've already done all the work. And just when you're ready, just wiggle your toes and kind of come back to us.
Thank you.
How's that feel? You sound a bit more grounded.
I'm trying. I can tell you were trying to regulate my nervous system a little bit.
Yeah. Because there's no more time.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
thanks.
It's happening in moments.
Yeah.
So it's like, there isn't anything left for me to do, just to show up. And the more you can invite yourself to soften, so you can listen and answer the questions and do what you need to do, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, whatever happens is going to be okay.
And I think thinking about it, it's just kind of, yeah. Because you can ignore it and distract yourself and, you know, you're fine. But then, yeah, the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, this is exactly why I'm worried.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. And also, you know, you've picked you.
Yeah.
You can pick you anytime. You can be like, oh, honey, I got you. If my arms don't pick you, I got you. It's okay. You know? It's nothing else you need to do or be.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, chances are it might not be either of them options that I would want either, you know? So
there you go. So notice how it's not necessarily about them picking you. Like your healthy self is like, hang on a second, we've got to pick them too.
Right.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. I think, you know, any time that we're doing something that makes us a little jangly, the work is often just to kind of go in and invite that part of us to kind of be okay.
Yeah.
Often what we do is all the other things around it.
A lot of logic for me, which makes it worse.
Yeah. And that's that overworking brain of you, big, enormous overworking brain.
Yeah.
And so it's always about coming back to compassion and imperfection. You can just show up. You can accept you, show up as you, and see what happens.
Yeah. Thank you.
So welcome.
I'm going to go run a little bit.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Good luck. Good
Thank
luck.
You.
I hope the outcome is what you decide you want. It may not be the one you're thinking about or you've been thinking about, right?
Yeah,
you
know, that's like, right.
Oh, these guys are not for me.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So good. Well, folks, I hope this is helpful just to kind of start to see what's the way in, right? It's very much about following the energy of the client, seeing what information they give you, trusting that their healthy adult self kind of knows. And our job is there to sort of poke around until we hear it and then reflect that back, giving them some options about where to go with it, right? And the tools are fine. You know, the tools work, they're great, they're all thoroughly tested and good fun. Clients love a bit of tool stuff, you know, and good for homework, all of that stuff. People who are self-reflective tend to really enjoy that process. And don't forget that you are your greatest coaching tool. Your presence, your interest, your empathy. That's the thing. That's the thing. All right. So I invite you to have a play. You may want to go into, you know, what's the area of the compass that's kind of the least developed for me? Let me go play with one of those tools and see what comes up for me. Take it to a practice pod and, you know, share that, see what comes up, let yourself just sort of go with it. And I had a WhatsApp message from a coach I worked with 3 years ago in the very first class who said, oh my God, I just did the heart map with a client for the first time. I don't know how I missed this, but it was bloody awesome. So there's no rush, right? Don't feel like you have to kind of figure it all out. And I think sometimes just having this little toolbox is super helpful for, you know, when you are like working with a client, you're like, how will I support them? It's a reference point for you to play with. it's a place to sort of see where you might take them. So yeah. So Heather, think about your clients and how you want to work with them. What are the kinds of, what are the parts of the compass that they may be the least developed in? Where do your clients tend to bring their issues? You know, what are they, where do they sit in terms of a protector? And then we can talk next week more about, you know, how to best support your clients and bring this to life in your practice. Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Really nice to see you all. And there is a study group on Thursday at 5 with Scott. And I will see you all next week. Yeah. Okay. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Good luck, Tina.
Thanks.